steaks today, and then
I got two of them.
First up, we're going to have a DMC update, and I think, Mr. Freeze, you want to lead off and then hand it off to Lisa?
Yes, that's okay. Okay. So what's in front of you and up on the screen is an update that that the Public Works and our consultant SRF gave to the board on their meeting last Thursday. So I'm just going to quickly go through this. Four of you were there, so this is primarily for the benefit of the three of you that weren't. But we presented this, just showed this schedule. It's very detailed. I'd be happy to meet with you if you have any specific information or even want a legible copy of it. But this is the overall project schedule for the four studies that are currently ongoing related to the transportation components of the DMC plan. We've got a little bit more of a milestone and delivery schedule, which I'll get into. There's another copy of this at the end. I'll kind of wrap up by going through this in great detail. But as you can see, we've broken the detail schedule down into milestones and delivery schedule. And if you notice on the column marked January, there's a lot of deliverables. We made some significant commitments to the board, and we're making those to you also. We'll have some information for you to review and some seeking some direction in January. The board meeting hasn't been set for January, but if it is, it's going to be there probably that last week. So we'll probably be coming to a committee of the meeting about mid-January to discuss some of these items with you. So one thing that we indicated to the board, and I plan on doing the same thing when I meet with you, is just to remind you there are 10 key transportation principles that are laid out in the plan, and the next three slides just state what those are, and we've highlighted some of the key words that we're striving for as guiding principles: easily and affordable, convenient, bring 30% of the workforce downtown, we're currently at 10%, using transit, created Park Once downtown, using a downtown circulator to get people back and forth within the downtown DMC district, build a shared parking, or build parking such that it can be shared. And again, in some of the projects that you've seen already, development projects, we've had that conversation about the public and private parts of some of those parking facilities within those private developments. Create a world-class street system designed for people. Create an exceptional place for healthy, human-powered transportation. Form a downtown access authority. Invest in sustainable transportation infrastructure to reduce the ecological footprint of the city. Leverage public and private transportation funds. The board as a whole is very impatient right now, would like decisions made sooner than later, or have the ability to make decisions sooner than later. And one of the reasons it's taking, will take as long as it is, because of the information that we need to prepare and the and present as it might relate to seeking public and private funding for some of this expensive infrastructure. And then the last is to be inclusive of all people of all ages, abilities, and states of wellness and well-being. So we've kind of put this slide together is to show you there's a lot of moving parts going on, not just only in transportation, but in the city. We've got the DMC plan, obviously. We've got the transportation plan, development plan update. We've got the comp plan ongoing. There's community input ongoing at all times. There's knowledge sharing, and there's emerging technology. When the DMC plan was first put together 2 years ago, the whole aspect of driverless vehicles, autonomous vehicles, which is something you read about in Popular Mechanics, now it dominates a lot of the communication that goes on in planning circles involving urban centers, conferences, transportation summits. So a lot of things have changed just in the 2 years. So there's a lot of moving parts. These are the four studies that you approved the funding for and incorporated them into the parking management study. And we're well underway. We've got a separate slide for each of these. Again, finding the colors and font color that goes together is not something we're really good at yet, but we're going to work on it. White on dark, certain colors doesn't work as well as black and vice versa sometimes, but I've got a slide for each one of the studies. This is the parking and transportation demand management. First column is what is underway, what are we working on? I'm not going to read these to you. The milestones are in the middle. We plan to bring back a parking model, a parking demand model for to show you how that works and how we're utilizing it, along with some preliminary TDM strategies that can be implemented as kind of a test case. And then the third column there shows how we're using those milestone results as we're moving toward the next decision making, which is to occur in May. So I've got a similar slide for transit. I guess I can't use that button. I got it. Sorry about that. So transit circulator study. Again, what is underway? The milestones here are a purpose and need statement, which is a requirement for seeking any federal or state funding, and initial mode and alignment alternatives. We won't have a final mode there. One thing that I am striving for, and I haven't heard anybody say don't do this, but one thing I am striving for is to bring back a mode or a series of modes at three different levels. And when I say three different levels, I'm talking about elevated, surface, and subterranean or subsurface. That we would bring back alternatives in each of those three levels for you to consider. So one of the questions one of the board members had is, has anything been eliminated yet? And the answer to that question is no, nothing has been eliminated yet. And we hope to be able to evaluate each and every level, whether it's a people mover that moves under, that moves like airport, that moves people underground, whether it's surface transportation, such as a tram, or whether it's elevated, some of the technology that we saw at our technology forum last Thursday afternoon, whether it's a monorail, PRTs, or anything else like that. We're going to basically keep all three levels in play to until we get to May, so you have that ability to look at all three. Sorry. So we've got street use and operations. Again, the milestones that we're looking at there are potential capacity assessments. So the traffic data that was used in the DMC plan was 2009 traffic information. It's already 7 years old. And so we're updating that. We've been out collecting additional information this fall, and we'll have that then to validate the portal capacity. That was the capacity of all the streets leading into downtown, with the understanding that we weren't going to be widening those. That portal capacity then is directly used to determine how much parking we need to make available, because if you can't get people into downtown, you don't need to provide parking for them. We're also going to look at the street typologies, which will look then at the width of streets, what streets will be used for transit, which ones will be used for the circulator, which ones might be better suited for bike paths and wider sidewalks and that sort of thing. And then the city loop study, again, the milestones are a base condition stress assessment. If you remember the bicycle plan when it was presented to you, there was information in there about stress level, and it's a tool now that's been used to help evaluate bike corridors as to determine not only where they physically might locate within the right-of-way, but also how likely people are to use them and the stress level they might have, because people are going to shy away from the ones where there's a lot of conflicts. So we'll basically be able to bring you information on the corridors, both on the stress condition and the just ability for them to be ADA accessible. For example, the current plan in the DMC plan shows that the city loop operate on 6th Avenue between 6th Street South and 2nd Street South. Well, if any of you have gone by the Presbyterian Church there, you know that even an avid bicyclist would have difficulty with some of the grades there. Michael probably could, but okay, I'm not so avid. Bicyclists would have difficulty with some of the grades there, much less wheelchairs and other people with mobility issues.
It's a hill.
It's a hill. So this was an exhibit that we put together again, not the easiest thing to read, but basically showing where we are. We're on the bottom of building the pyramid here. We've got some of the deliverables that I talked about that we'll have in January. We'll then look at using that data we've collected to make future forecasts, come up with an initial set of options that will be then presented in May for decision, getting to a preferred design by September, and then beginning implementation and plan phasing and funding strategies between September and December so that that can be incorporated into 2018 budgeting. Now, this is a really busy slide here, but it was meant to show that we talked about partnerships and funding. If we're going to seek federal funding, this is a process that we're going to need to follow. And what the purpose of this slide is to show you that on the left side are the things that we're working on in 2016 and 2017 just to get to the point that we can begin the application process for federal funding. And under the New Starts program, which is a current federal program for such things as trams and streetcars and light rail, that process can take anywhere from a year to 10 years, depending on the project that we would be proposing. We need to do a lot of background work to put us in a position to begin the application process, which gets primarily into some of the environmental review and the engineering and then the construction and testing. So we just lay this out there because, again, there's been a lot of comment from the board about getting something started. We think we're well on the way with the work that we're doing, but we're not going to be able to basically start a project that involves federal funding for probably 2 to 3 years yet. So again, getting back to the milestones and deliveries, I kind of touched on these as I went through each one of the. We're going to have some stakeholder workshops and meetings to gather more input from the public through engagement activities. The street use and operations plan will have the portal capacity and the typologies. The parking and TDM study will have information on demand estimates and the policy and financial adjustments that we need to make. The transit circulation study will be a purpose and need and initial alternatives, and the city loop will look at baseline conditions and precedent guidance. Again, what have other communities done? Those of you that went to Indianapolis, for example, you saw the trail system there. That's one of the models that we're using. The Minneapolis trail system also are some of the precedents that we're looking at to see, again, what some of the challenges that they had. So that's the end of my presentation, very short. But again, if you have any questions on this, please give me a call. Happy to sit down with you on a one-on-one basis as necessary to talk about anything that's in here.
Mr. Hickey?
So I've got a question back on slide 4.
Which is?
DMC Transportation Principles.
Okay.
Yep, that's it.
Okay.
So when this was presented at the DMC meeting, when the consultant from SRF talked to Bullet 5, he stated that the priorities for these studies were number one, pedestrians, number two, bicycles, number three, transit, number four, automobiles. And I'd asked you, what published plan was that enumerated in? And you had said it was in the original DMC plan, which I went back and looked, and it's not there.
Okay.
So, the actual wording in the DMC transportation principles is incorporating all forms of transportation, incorporating pedestrian transit and bicycles where it makes sense. But it doesn't pit one form of transportation against the other. It doesn't enumerate a priority. And, this should be not consultant-driven. It should be, the priority should be driven by elected officials. So if that's someplace in the plan that I was missing, you can find it for me. But
I will.
All right.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay.
I would just throw out, too, that I disagree with this from the standpoint that design should be driven by people with high competencies in design, which elected officials do not necessarily represent.
And I think, I'm sorry. My answer to Mr. Hickey at the board meeting was, though, is that when we say design for people, for example, for pedestrians, it's moving the barriers for pedestrians. For bicyclists, again, it's removing barriers, making certain that last mile that we have difficulty with. We have a great trail system, but it's that last mile, half mile, getting into downtown, getting to your location. Designing out those obstacles and basically looking at it, that as we do that and try to encourage that mode shift to those type of things, we've got the car problem addressed. I mean, we've got roads that are plenty wide enough and lanes and turn lanes and everything. It's designing these streets for people that aren't in their vehicles, and that includes people walking, biking, and on transit.
Mr. Newman?
Yeah, I think the two biggest messages are, you know, the studies that we've done by the end of 17, and there's milestone checkpoints, and for each one of these, you know, they'll be coming back and providing a report and seeking the input from the mayor and city council and also the DMC board. So, you know, there'll be multiple opportunities as we go forward in 2017 for you to have this information provided to you on where they're at and what are the options and where is this thing heading. So,
all right. Other questions, comments? All right, thank you. Continuing with the DMC update, Lisa, do you have some comments?
So Patrick, you might want to join as well. Patrick and I thought on the heels of Richard's update, we promised you all that we would bring you the updates after every DMCC board meeting so that we're all in sync and making sure that we are all on the same page. So last time, the format that we used was really to just walk through the agenda and give you a sense of what happened at the DMCC board meeting, and we've got two of our DMCC board members here as well who can certainly feel free to weigh in. If you have any questions, have at it. So we'll start. Patrick's passing around the agenda, so we can go on. Basically, the agenda broke down into a few components, some of the basics, and then we went into project updates. And the city staff and the EDA staff do the project updates together now, which I think is really powerful and important for people to see that we're in this together and we're bringing those projects forward. As projects start to come through the pipeline, we will bring those together to the DMCC board for first blush before they come forward for any ask in terms of dollars. So we do project updates, and then we went into the budget. So we'll talk about those two pieces as well, and Richard already talked about transportation. So Patrick's our economic development director, as you know, and we had three projects discussed at the DMCC board meeting on Thursday. First was the Lattice project, and basically what we discussed there was to get permission from the DMCC board to move forward in terms of an adjustment to the boundary. And so it's a 60-day process, as you all know, and the DMCC board members approved that process, that we will begin that process.
I'd note that they have to start the process. They weren't approving it. They weren't approving anything else. You have to approve the boundary modification before they do, and then it goes back to them for a public hearing that's noticed 10 days at the end of that 60-day period. So you're the next step in that process. They haven't approved the boundary modification. They just started the process.
Then we had two projects come forward. I'll have Patrick explain those just very briefly so you're aware of what's coming through the pipeline right now.
So again, as Lisa said, the DMCC board's expectation and desire is that they would see and hear from a proposed project once before it would come forward to any formal action or request of them. And with that in mind, there were two projects that are in early stages or at some stage of the development review process here in the city that we wanted to have some exposure in front of the DMCC board. One is the project on First Avenue that is being proposed by Opus and Titan, Opus out of Minneapolis and Titan out of Rochester. And this is a primarily a housing development that will include street-level retail. Again, this is on First Avenue between 4th and 5th Streets.
And we provided you information on the project, so you know where it is and have the map, so, okay.
So there's work that still has to be done from a land use and planning and zoning point of view, and so there's work that's going on at that level as well. Any questions about that, or would you like any further description about that?
Okay. I think one of the unique things about that project is they look to activate both First Avenue and Broadway.
I very much appreciate that. It's a very good approach to design, and I'm glad that we're going down that road.
The second one that we
introduced
completely unintentional
is by Amos Development, and it is for a project at, on First Avenue and West Center Street, commonly known as the Days Insight, for some people the location of Panakukin, so just set your bearings, and it is for a hotel and residential development that also would have street level retail. They have again just begun their process with planning and zoning land use process as well.
I think one of them had. I think did this one have a neighborhood meeting last week?
The Hamas did.
Project development informational meeting. And I think the other one remains to be scheduled. So they're still both at a very early stage of the process.
Questions about the projects?
Well, I just say to be proactive on that one. I've sent some information from some of the folks that have preservation concerns just ahead of time to the city administrator. Hopefully, just have those questions firmly answered before we ever get the project in front of us. Many of you know Steve and Jane, who are kind of local preservation experts right here. They sent Steve and some information recommendations for how to evaluate this. And ultimately, if we have that information, when it gets time to weigh this project, it just takes that whole question out of the equation for us, which would be really nice.
And also, the Hamas project, they did meet with the neighborhood group, Bob Dunn and his people, and that went pretty well. And there were some questions asked there that they needed to get addressed. But I thought about a group of 20 showed up to hear the presentation. Patrick was also there, and I thought it went pretty well.
So I would mention that on the historic preservation question, we sent you an email letting you know that, to start that process, somebody's got to pay for a study and commence it on whether it is historic. First of all, that's the first question. We explained the rationale why we did check with Mr. Koop of the Schiphol group at the state to make sure we were following, hiring the right type of consultant. And so for consistency purposes, we're proceeding ahead with the 106 group to have them review and see if it is historic. And that's kind of the starting point for this on that end of things.
And I believe the Heritage Preservation Commission is going to be meeting to take that up as well. Is that correct?
I think HPC is going to be meeting to have discussions about the...
Right. I think right now they're just waiting for the study to be done that we just talked about, the 106 group, just so they have something to kind of work off of. Right. So that way they can present the project and the 106 group can also present their findings and that'll kind of be the next step.
We did want to be in a position where the city was retaining the person, the company,
yes,
doing the work, rather than the developer retaining anybody they want. So
I suspect we'll always get a better answer that way.
I think a more objective answer.
Yes.
Okay. Then we walked through the sub-district update. The Heart of the City sub-district had two components to it. Both of those committees are led by the mayor. The public space design milestone schedule, which is RSP Architects, that's the group that's working on the public space for Heart of the City. They gave the milestone schedule similar to what you saw with Richard, and so that people can get a sense of when public will give input, when the boards give input, and the progress that they will see. They're on a good time frame, and I believe it's June of 2017 that they'll have a report for us.
They'll have their work done by the end of June.
Yeah. And then the other one was the Chateau Theater. Again, very similar. They have a milestone schedule. They've brought forward some thoughts on recommendations. And Mayor, I don't know if you want to comment on that.
We're having a meeting, so we'll
find out what they've got.
Okay.
It's exciting.
Yeah. Progress.
Gary, did you want to say more about either one of these?
No, I think the Chateau Theater report will be coming as you know, said, right? You know, post haste, and I think it covered it fine.
And then finally, Patrick, you'll want to talk about the St. Mary's Place design sprint that we are in the middle of?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So we have, and we actually didn't have time for this report at DMCC, just in light of all the other things we covered, but we have been working with a group of stakeholders from the St. Mary's District, and when I say stakeholders, we're talking about the property owners on 2nd Street, including Mayo, neighborhood representatives from three adjacent neighborhoods, and city staff, in really responding to the question of what is the public realm and public infrastructure needs for that geography, basically from 11th Avenue to 16th Avenue, in light of and anticipation of the development pressure we're seeing in that district. So we have been involved in a process, and Andy Masterpole from SEH is here. I don't know if you're here for this reason, but has been assisting our team with this. And we led what we call a design sprint process to do a deep dive into exploring three alternatives to what that district could look like. Again, when I talk about public realm and public infrastructure, we're talking about the streets, the sidewalks, the pedestrian movement, parking, the impact of transit, and connections to the neighborhoods. And we did an exercise, and Councilmember Hickey and Wojak both participated, as did city staff. We did an exercise where we broke into three distinct work groups and asked people to take on the point of view of a particular constituency. So we said to one group, take on the point of view of being a Mayo employee, patient, or a family member, and help us think about how we would treat the conditions in this district with that bias, if you will, that point of view. And we had another group take on the point of view of being a landowner or a business or a developer in that district, and how would you think about the priorities for these issues from that perspective. And then a third group took on the point of view of being a neighborhood resident. And again, looking at the same district from that point of view. As a result of that, we came up with three somewhat distinct alternatives, which Andy and his team, and with support from the Minnesota Metropolitan Design Center from the University of Minnesota, developed three different concepts, which we're now sharing publicly, those three different concepts, again, from each of those particular points of view, and we're getting those concepts out publicly and getting feedback and comments to those with the expectation that we'll come back with a fourth alternative that represents really the where there is clear overlap and commonality and best solutions. In the meantime, we're also doing some prototyping or demonstration to test out some of the ideas. And last week, Nice Ride Rochester, the bike sharing program, did a day-long test of having a bike share at the St. Mary's campus connected to the downtown campus of Mayo. And they had about 50, it's about 70 people participate. The participation meant using a bike to get from the downtown campus to St. Mary's and back from St. Mary's to the downtown campus. And they completed surveys about what their experience was and improvements that could be made and the likelihood that they would use bike sharing as an alternative to shuttle or driving from one end to the other. So that's one example of the kind of demonstration or testing we're trying to do. And we hope to do some others between now and a plan adoption, if you will. Our goal is to have something in front of you and the DMCC in time for the, in December, that would help influence the thinking around the Lattice project, that being the first major development that is coming forward, asking for city and DMCC support.
All right.
Yeah.
Did you get any preliminary results of the nice ride between?
I have not seen, it was on Thursday, the day of the DMCC board meeting, so I was, I did get over there to participate.
Okay.
I have not seen the results yet.
Good point.
Andy, if you did or not. We haven't seen that, they haven't been compiled yet.
All right.
The last part of the budget, agenda was budget, and this year, our process evolves, and I think it was a really good process this year, and I'll have council member Hickey also comment on this, but the DMCC appoints a subgroup to help us develop our budget for 2017 this year. Councilmember Hickey was your rep on that budget process, along with Jim Campbell and Mike Doherty and I can't remember who else.
Here.
Thank you. And it was really good. So we had four meetings total, actually. To talk about the work plan. We developed a work plan for the DMCC EDA budget in particular. And then we obviously put the dollars to serve up to the work plan, and then we negotiated and had a good discussion about what needs to happen in 2017 and what kind of dollars do we need to make that happen. We also met with Steve and Gary on the front end of this so that we are all on the same page. There's a couple of you that I still want to link back with, but most of you have connected with on the budget. And I think for the most part, it was very positive. The DMCC also has a budget, as you know, and between the DMCC budget, the EDA budget, and the city, you have a portion of the DMC budget also. We probably saved about $1 million this year going in. So I think it was a very positive process. And Councilmember Hickey, I don't know if you have any comments on it.
Yeah, I'll echo some of those comments. I thought it was a very good process, the EDA staff and the city staff working together, along with that DMC budget group. From the city's perspective, I think our goal going into it is really to, maximize the use of that quarter cent sales tax, split it between the important work and the EDA work plan, but also make sure we had enough money left over for the actual project cost. So I thought this struck a very nice balance, and I appreciate everybody's hard work in putting that together.
It was approved by the DMCC board. It'll be coming to your meeting on November 7th, as we did last year. We approved their budget kind of right after their meeting, so it'll be consistent with what you did last year.
Mr. Woodgate?
My understanding, too, the $1 million was relative to the last year's budgets. How does the current year budget compare to, or the next year's budget compare to current year actuals?
Well, next year's budget is closer to this year's actuals. The actual spending has been less than what was budgeted, so they've been doing a good job of managing the budget during this year, so it should match up pretty well
with
next year's budget.
And the final component of the budget discussion was the capital improvement plan, and Gary, I'll look to you. Did you share that with me?
Yes, they also had that.
So you'll see the capital improvement plan, and a lot of that had to do with transportation. If you recall, we forward a capital improvement plan, a five-year plan, high level, but each year the DMCC board approves 1 year, and then it comes to your group.
There's also the potential for a couple of critical sanitary sewer projects where there's either insufficient capacity or it goes right through the middle of where development's going to go. So those are in the budget as well.
All right.
So there you have it. Any questions about progress and what's happening?
Questions, comments? Anyone?
Comments? If I was still in mail, I would roll the bike back and forth a lot. I'm just saying, that would have been a nice day. It would have been a great way to get back and forth. So I would have participated in that as well.
Yeah, Mr. Campion.
One of the things I find is we don't often allocate time to kind of figure out if we're working as optimal as possible. I wrote down here, is this working? And I don't think now is the appropriate time to get into it, because I think it's probably a bigger conversation than we have time to tackle right now. But one thing maybe to queue up for early 2017, as we start laying out the COW agenda, would be to have a comeback where we sit down and let's take another look at this process and figure out if this thing, if there's any tweaks that we should have. Frankly, I think that comes from both sides of the table when it comes to the way we lay out the budget and the way the projects are progressing from planning through city administration to DMCC board. I think, you know, rather than maybe wait for problems to crop up, if we're already starting to see something as we get the first kind of full projects through this process, bring them back so we can address that, and maybe I'll save some of the is this working for that point, but I'd like to see that in early 2017 for us all to get together and have that conversation.
I like that, and just so you know, we do meet with the city staff regularly, every other week actually, and we do that regularly. We say what's working, what isn't, let's tweak the process as we go so that it's not a one-time deal. So this will evolve, but I think I would welcome any input on the process.
Yeah, because maybe it's also, that's one thing I, if I can go ahead and train on this comment, that's one thing I took away from the kind of the joint city-county DMCC board meeting was just getting on the same page has some pretty tremendous value, but
yeah.
Also all those bright minds, I know it's hard to coordinate all those schedules, but it could be really useful, I think, to say, you know, we keep getting this feedback that these transit things are not happening fast enough. Either we have to level set that this is as fast as it's going to possibly happen, or someone sees some inefficiency that hopefully we can solve. And I think having those conversations could be really fruitful for this particular group.
Yeah, I would welcome that. It's great.
All right. Anything else? All right. Thank you for the report.
Thank you.
We'll see you in the December.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra. Thank you. All right, moving on to our next item, which is the mobile food unit ordinance review. We had said when we enacted that ordinance that we wanted to give it a season and then have some opportunity to have some conversation, see what worked, what didn't, and perhaps make some adjustments for next season. Normally, we don't take public testimony in committee of the whole, but this time what I suggested is that we do allow some of those who participated or that would have some thoughts on the ordinance for our consideration as we anticipate maybe making some changes for next season. So with that in mind, and we did receive a few printed comments by email or Twitter or some other mechanisms, and I know some of those individuals are here today, but really what we want to do is hear from your experiences. So I don't know if anyone wants to stick their hand up and go first or share any comments. Certainly we'll have some discussion among council members as well, and then see where this takes us.
I have to defer to Fred. I mean, Fred was down
all season.
Yeah. No.
All
right. No, I mean, I sat down with Aaron Reeves a couple weeks ago, and I laid it all out. I mean, I don't know what more I could say that I hadn't already said, you know, when this whole thing was being created. So I'm still of the same feelings now as I was then, so.
Well, what I, my past experience, that we were the most consistent ones. We were there every day except the day, so the entire summer. And I don't know if more vendors would have helped our business, because then the word would have spread faster to the people who work in the Mayo Clinic area. We had a good clientele, but I think if more vendors come, we would have the same amount of business. We all go broke, because it wasn't enough to share the Max restaurant came twice. They pushed us away two times because they moved in sooner, and I think that wasn't quite fair, because if we're there every day and then they show up 15 minutes sooner and they say that's their spot, I think we shouldn't get into a realty fight where who belongs to what spot. So I would say it would be maybe helpful that more food vendors would show up in the coming season. And then there's another weekend system. You know, I talked to John, the officer, what is it? It's called
Sergeant Turk.
Turk. And he agreed with me that we should be staying open later, because we stayed open the first two times we tried it. I sent three people down to work We took in $50, and then by noon, by midnight, we had to close up and go home. So that's why we discontinued doing that. Because the people do not come out of the bars to have us a bite to eat, not till 1 o'clock or so. And so we stuck around from 9 o'clock till midnight. We had a few customers, and then we backed up away. So maybe you want to consider that in the future to make it more visible for us to make some more money. If we would experience any problems after midnight or 1 o'clock that we would have to deal with drunks, we would be better off than close up and go home. We would want to stick around. But I noticed also there's enough control officers walking around constantly, so it was a, till midnight it was peaceful, so I don't know how it was after midnight.
Okay, thank you. As I read the comments, all of the comments seem to focus on three things, certain location, the hours of operation, and the fees. Those seem to be the key items.
Sergeant Turk is here.
Oh, Sergeant Turk, you have some comments.
I guess I could share a few. We didn't, besides Fred's maybe experiment coming downtown, we didn't see really the food vendors down there. Based on the area of most active pedestrian flow, if they were staying within the current late night areas on Second Street, they're kind of really out of sight, out of mind as far as the vendors, just because of pedestrian flow. It's hard to gauge the success of those areas because there wasn't enough activity. The vendors weren't there for extended long periods of time, dated, you know, a couple weeks or whatever, where you can see how well that worked. Briefly, I was reviewing the map of the proposed changes that was in the agenda, and there was a couple proposals to move the late night zone, I'm correcting this, onto First Avenue Southwest to south of Second Street. That would increase visibility for the vendors, for that crowd that's on First Avenue. I guess the only other comment I have is there was a proposal on at least the map that I could see of a late night zone. It appears to be in the alleyway behind Kathy's and Dick Rad's. From the police department's perspective, we would have some concern of establishing a zone in there. It's a congested area. Accessibility for public safety response within that alley, ranging from police calls, dealing with intoxicated individuals, to medical calls that we've experienced working down there. So I'm not sure what the thought on how that would be designed or controlled, but we would just have some concerns about creating additional congestion within that alleyway.
All right. Other comments or questions from the council? I had some questions on the location. So taking those suggestions one at a time, the area along 3rd Avenue Southwest across from Methodist Hospital, that seems to be a good idea to help service some of the evening hospital workers. Do you think that would be a problem if we tried to do something there? Okay. It looks like one of the other zones on 1st Avenue, actually, it looked like they were proposing just moving that existing late night zone from 2nd Street, really around the corner, onto 1st Avenue. Do you think that would be a problem from a patrol standpoint?
It's easier for us to patrol, just because it's more in our visual sight from the foot patrols that frequent the 1st Avenue area.
Right, and it's a little bit away from the bar activity, and it gets them off of the potential busy 2nd Street. Okay, Mr. Vilbeck.
Yeah. I was going to comment on all the questions as well. Fees, I don't know, it just says lower fees, and that's what we got from pretty much everybody. So my feeling is to ask the city clerk to go and look to see what it costs to do Rochester Fest or the Homestead County Fair or Steele County Fair. Just get some ideas. Because I'm not opposed to lowering fees, but I want to know, have a good idea of what that means. At this point, I don't. There was also one about trash, making sure that the vendors provide their own trash service. I have no problem with that. I do like the idea of moving the people from on Second Street, either, and I'm not, I don't have a preference whether we move them from between Second and Third or Third and Fourth, but keep them on First Avenue. I think the visual is a good idea. Most of the food services on the south end of First shuts down well before they would be there anyhow. And I think that might bring some more attractiveness to having the food trucks out there. And so I have no problem with that. I think that makes a lot of sense. I do like Mr. Riegel's comment about something we need to look at is the territorial issue of where trucks park and not park. I do understand the fact that he worked hard to build a base this year. He took the chance, and then all of a sudden he gets bumped out, and people are used to his truck being there and going to that location. So I think that makes a lot of sense as well. There was also a comment about Discovery Square, and I do believe that if Discovery Square starts to be built, we need to address that. I think any of these major projects where we have activity going on, we're going to have a lot of people coming into that area to work. They're also going to need to eat. We need to be open and flexible to address those issues when they come up. So I thought the suggestions were good. Nothing that I oppose to, but I do think we need to get some idea. Telling me that we need to lower the fees doesn't help me a whole lot. Tell me what that is. Tell me how that compares to what we did this year and what some of the other groups are doing. That would help me much more to give me an idea of where we should go or how we should do that.
Question, what about the idea of extending the late night hours beyond 1 a.m.?
I think as long as we have the people in a visible area, I'm willing to try that. It's an understanding that depending on what the report comes back from the police department, based on issues that they may have. One of the concerns that was brought to us initially by the police department was if we left them open later, it could cause the crowds to stay downtown later and cause an additional cost to the police department. I'm willing to give it a try and see, but understanding that I'm hoping that with the visibility of putting these food vendors out into a visual pattern where they can see it versus where they were last year, that might be decent, and they should be able to patrol that area and have no problem. If we have an issue, I'd be willing to relook at it.
And I think one of the other side benefits as we've been downtown is there's a lot of appetite for cabs all at the same time. So right. If you can kind of smooth that out, if people were maybe right. Grabbing a bite to eat while they're waiting for a cab, that might help.
Right. This Saturday, I think we were in 30 minutes average wait at the bar closing. And again, there's a massive rush out there, so if there's an opportunity for people to get something to eat, that probably would make life a little bit easier.
Mr. Campion.
Can we talk the mechanics of moving it around the corner? Because isn't there angled parking there?
I think the idea would be is that you pick a length that would allow for, I don't know, say maybe two units on each side of the street, or however we want to do it. And we would still sign those the same way we sign on the other side. It would just be that the mobile food units would know that they're allowed to pull in like they normally would. So we may just have to take out more parking spots to allow that to happen, obviously. But that's what the proposal would be, because otherwise there's not really a way to in that area other than just you sign off a few more areas and allow first come, first serve for up to X number of vehicles. We'll figure out what that basic size would be. We'd sign that number of signs. Or that number of meters for the mobile food unit only parking, and then let them pull in the way that they're supposed to with the ordinance to serve to the sidewalk.
And they make it work in other cities, so I think that's really a positive about this. Is there was some concern about a rush of people trying to get these food trucks out, and that hasn't materialized. So I think now the opportunity is there to open the aperture, if you will, a little bit more, and maybe loosen the regulation up a little bit and see if we can get more. That's obviously my intent, and I know everyone has a slightly different perspective on this. I think pulling around the corner does another kind of useful benefit that I know the police presence on the street is great. I think that's a real prime thing. And like you said, I think line of sight is incredibly important. This is kind of a I see it, I want it, I'm going to go get it situation. It's probably not I'm going to walk six blocks out of the way to go find where it is. So I think, moving around the corner is great. I almost wonder, is there other spots that we should be opening up as part of this? I mean, I know that there are other spots we should be opening up. I think that's a particular good decision. I guess I'd like to see some of these other spots. I didn't know about the alley one. I kind of agree that promoting people hanging out in that alley is probably not what we want to do, at least until we kind of re-envision that alley, because it's kind of claustrophobic, and I think that there's a lot going on back there, and certainly we've had problems historically, so I think it's probably something we should just figure out if there's a better location for it. But as terms of the fees, I think, you know, we should own, I think we're only legally allowed to recoup what it costs us to operate the program. I don't know.
We're talking about a franchise fee here, mm-hmm. So this is the actual ability to use our right of way.
Got it. I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. The I guess from my perspective, trying to encourage more of these, I think, is exactly right. The more we have, you get a collision value, you get people that just want to go down there and figure out what they want when they get there, and if they see something they're interested in, they're going to do it. Otherwise, they're probably going to walk back and go back to their office. So I think that's it. That's what I had.
Mr. Bilbeck, then Mr. Bilbeck. And I think to go back to Mr. Campkin's comment, honestly, I'd like to close that end of First Avenue off anyhow. So even if you put two on the curb, two in the middle, two on the on the other side, or three, or whatever it works out to be, because of the pedestrian traffic that we have down there, and because of the patios that we have on First Avenue, we have pedestrians who are not walking to the corner to cross the street. So we have many of them who are crossing wherever they feel like it. And we have a lot of traffic racing up and down that area. So my feeling was I wouldn't even have a problem with shutting the street off at that end totally. And that way that you would have more room for more food trucks. That would work fine for me.
I like that.
Believe Mr.
How do we make that happen? I thought that was off the table. We got the votes for that?
I don't know, but I do agree with Mr. Campion on the fact that we do need to keep an open mind on where the trucks should be allowed to go or not go. Especially, like I say, when you went to the DMC the other day, you listened to all the construction projects and all the meetings that I know I've had with different groups. There's a lot of construction going on around the city where we're going to be bringing a lot of people into work. And so to make sure that we give them the opportunity to get a variety of food, too, we need to be open to that.
Nail on the head. There are a lot of people working shifts that we don't all work that look for food at different times, and this is a great, flexible way to service that. So I think that's a really good point.
Mr. Woodja?
Well, I'm just fine with closing off just about any street anytime, so no problem there. I don't typically support the alley because if they're using the public right-of-way, I mean, the alley is only 12 to 18 feet, depending on where you're at. You can't put food trucks there and still have vehicles going through. We've got, at night, we've got four lanes on Broadway, and we only need two. So that's a, you know, there's other cities will take a lane off. I think we saw that in Nashville a little bit, too. I strongly support lowering the fees. I thought they were too high when we initiated this, and not surprisingly, we got feedback that they're too high. I'm interested in covering the real cost to us, and and even with the franchise fee, if there's not much cost associated with this for us, I don't necessarily want to stick extra fees on there. And I certainly want less regulation, both in terms of the hours that they can operate and the locations which they can operate. I'd like to give them as much freedom on both of those as they can have. I'm a little bit concerned about the going so far as to assign spots, because I don't know if we necessarily want to introduce that level of regulation, put it on ourselves. I think that as long as the rules are laid out clearly, the market can respond. And lastly, I'm not worried about the cab stand waits, because as soon as we approve Uber, that's going to take care of the issue.
I hope so. I'll be watching. and I think, speaking to Mr. Wojak's concern about spots, if we were to have a zone where they could park, and there was plenty of zones for them to park, people who are used to seeing the food trucks that they want to go to, if they're at least in that area, should be able to handle it. That's another reason why I would support shutting down the end of the fork, so you could use the middle of the road also to park trucks, so you could have at least three lanes of food trucks.
Mr. Mayor?
Just a question. How many did we have on a regular basis? I haven't even heard that number.
I think we had one that was licensed, but if you look around Rochester, those that are in private parking areas, there's about 8 to 10.
We generally had one regularly. We had two that were technically licensed through the city. We had one that was on a private basis.
Mr.
Okay. Other questions, comments, or members from the audience that had some comments?
I would add one thing.
Could they identify themselves, whoever's speaking?
Sure. Oh,
just your name.
Derek Chapman. I would say also, like, to that Third Avenue spot over by Methodist, you know, I think maybe some wording could be changed in the ordinance that states if a food establishment is already closed, that 150-foot buffer doesn't apply, because that could hurt some of those zones to where you could service some of that late-night group at Methodist Clinic, because you have a Jimmy John's right there, you have that CB3, those would all be included in that 150-foot zone. But if those restaurants aren't open and serving food, and the food trucks could service that group of people there, I think maybe there could be some language put into the ordinance that would exempt that.
I think in that situation, when we talk about these zones on this side here that are outside of right now what we designate as our district for the food trucks, we would have to amend the ordinance to move this over, and that way these would be included. Because if it's in the zone, then it doesn't have that buffer. If you're in the downtown, the yellow line, the downtown zone, and you have an identified area like we do now, it doesn't apply to that 150 buffer. So if we do decide to move forward with any of these changes, you know, either here or here, we would amend the zone to move it over here and then put those in, so then they could operate whatever the hours are that are allowed for that small stretch.
All right, Ms. Campbell? The yellow is a district boundary that is specific for mobile food units.
All exist.
Perfect, okay. I just want to make sure, because at one point I remember we were modeling it after the central business.
We sort of did, but it only exists for this reason.
Okay, great.
The ordinance.
No, I think that's great.
Move that boundary around, and it would only apply to this.
Good.
All right. Other questions, comments? I would also entertain ideas on where you think you want to go with this, because we certainly want to get it, any changes in place so that people could plan accordingly for next season. I mean, we've got a little bit of runway here, but I don't want to prolong it.
Well, I think you nailed the top three kind of issues here. And so I guess the location one is kind of complex. So I think maybe hammering those out and maybe sitting down with individuals who have been out there specifically would help. The ones that I think are kind of more directional, hours of operation, for instance, that's really just a policy problem. I mean, the reason that we decided to close them down was concern about policing the activity. If we're hearing, I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but I'm gonna paraphrase. We're hearing that's maybe not as big an issue, or that it seemed to be under control so far. I think that's really just a policy decision. And lengthening the hours, letting them go to, you want to say 2 a.m., I think that's a policy decision for us to make. I'd be comfortable lengthening like that. The fees, again, policy decision, I think. I think everyone who's running a business is going to say lower, and everyone who, and a lot of other people are going to have different opinions. But I'm going to be a strong advocate for lowering it. Trying to get it below $1,000, I think, is a reasonable one. If we could take it down to $900, I think that starts to get to be where about we were when we started, hopefully. But I think that's a good start.
Mr. Goldman.
Yeah, I don't have any real disagreements with anything that Mr. Campion said. I would still like to see what the comparison costs are for
sure.
Other activities, other events around the area. Not that I'm going to say that's how we should set the price, but just to have an idea of what a comparison cost is. So my feeling is if by the second meeting in December we could have those numbers together, that would be great, and that way we could put this thing to bed so that people could know what they're going to be doing if they're going out to run a food operation next year. And I agree with Mr. Campion. Most of this is just simply policy decisions. So my question is for Mr. Reeves, if you could have all that information by the second meeting in December.
I could have it sooner than that.
Okay. When could you have it?
It won't take that long. I mean, it's a week. I should be able to pull together numbers. So.
Yeah. I mean, honestly.
I just don't want to see it. I agree with Mr. Staver. We don't want to see this drag out.
Right.
And so my feeling is we need to put a date on it that we need to have this back so we can address and get it done.
If you want to give time to also maybe provide a little better map than my creative finger drawing with this one, you know, we could, if you gave it a couple weeks till that, the 21st or somewhere in there, we could have it back with some fees from other comparables in the community, events and things, or other cities too, just to have that. And then as far as the map goes, I think from what I've heard, clearly the one in the alley, and again, I just put these on paper, I didn't edit or prejudge, the one in the alley we'll remove as an option. We didn't, and for this one here, I will have to talk with Public Works a little bit about how they feel as far as that option of closing the street, if that's something the council really wants to pursue. I mean, I can see some technical difficulties with doing that every weekend, but I'm sure we can work through them if that's the council's direction, but I want to make sure that's really what, otherwise.
I'm fully supportive of starting that conversation, because I think it also sets up a lot of the interesting opportunities for the other side, part of the city side of that, so that, I think it's a good...
My guess would be is you'd want to look at maybe the south side, not the north side on second, but the south side by fourth. That would seem like...
I have no problem with that, but if you could do that by November 21st.
We could have the conversations by then and get some feedback if you're interested, yeah.
Well, if we're looking at this possibility too, I'd just be interested in looking at the possibility of using the outside lanes on Broadway.
I mean, that's a lot more complicated in my mind, but I don't know much about it, so maybe.
Yeah, I guess
can
that
you
I
have the conversation and come back with us about like what it would take either one.
Actually, my thought would be it'd be less complicated because you're not actually stopping the traffic flow there. Right. It's
Mr. Chair,
hello, I'm intrigued by Michael's thing. My concern would be is by restricting the outside lanes, you will now cause difficulty for the cab stands that are along Broadway, specifically in the 300 block on both the east and west side.
Well, and I guess we'd probably want to exclude the cab stands area from that. Okay, we're not getting cab stands with Uber anyway.
Well, they got to get picked up somewhere and figure out where to stay.
I can have that conversation, but at the least, the alternative is that the council can, depending on how that goes, decide if you want to close the section on this side, either on both sides of the street or one, or both. You can do, just regular parking areas on this side, regular parking areas on the lower side as well.
Is the mouse not matching up?
Is it?
I just want to make sure.
I'm way off.
Okay.
On my screen, it's way over. So when I do this, sorry about that.
He's closing down the building.
All right. So what I was saying was if the closing doesn't seem to be reasonable, you can still look at assigning the parking spots on both sides of the streets on the north and even on the south side to kind of create two zones downtown for that to help make up some of that difference if that's an option too. So I'll kind of throw all those out there and then bring back what staff comment is on that. Was there any comment on this lunch? Oops, I got to make sure I'm looking at the right screen. The lunch zone here, which would be taking it from, this part would stay here, but the request was to also allow another one here. Because there's only enough room, I think, at this spot here for maybe two vehicles. Would this be an option that right across from the Mayo Clinic building? Is that something to consider or not? Mm-hmm. It seems like we have consensus that this one is okay up here as a late night zone, but we didn't really talk about this one here as another second lunch zone.
I guess I'll go out there and I'm supportive of pretty much any of these spots. I'd really like no zones, but I think the net here is really finding ones that are comfortable for the rest of the council. Because if there are people that want to eat at those spots, I think we should figure out how to get the food to them.
It's clearly much closer to the downtown area.
I agree with that.
Mr. Hickey?
So what form is this going to come back to us?
A nice map. Okay. We'll bring you that. Right. We'll differentiate the current existing zones, which nobody's requesting that we change these. I'm not sure that... Maybe they'll be used more with more trucks, but we'll bring a map that shows these kind of new proposed zones, not with this one, but with these ones. And then I'll bring back information on far as fees that they're paying now for, say, the county fair or Rochester Fest, whatever that might be. I can also bring the other city fees again, too. We already have that information pulled together. So we can bring that back. And then as far as the conversations about these proposed zones as well, so talk with Public Works and transit to make sure what are their feelings about closing a street or even looking at just the extended zones on these streets.
Yeah, because I'm generally supportive of everything we talked about today. I'm not too wild about the idea of blocking off streets, but as long as it's just a conversation.
Yeah, that would just be then you can decide with the input from those departments how you want to proceed with changing zones if you do.
And let's just, I just want to also be clear, like the time that it closes, I think that's also a flexibility point. So can we, and when you're having the conversation, let's not say it closes at a specific time. Let's figure out if there's a time that works.
Right. I mean, the request, I think, was 2:30 to 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And so I think that would be the standing request because of late night zones is 2:30 to 3 a.m. And I'm assuming the police department could comment on that one, too, if they feel comfortable one or the other.
Okay. Anyone else? We've given you enough direction, Mr. Reed?
Yep.
Sounds like we can take a look at this in a couple of weeks and see where we're at.
Yep.
All right, thank you. Thank you for the comments. Those were helpful. Moving on to other business. Mr. Wojcik, you had a couple of questions.
Yeah. One of them's been answered. I asked for when we're getting going to see the draft of the comp plan. And Mitzi doesn't have the answer right now, but she's going to prepare a memo for us. So I'm okay with that. And then the other item was, I have not, maybe you guys have, but I have not heard from Stephen that all of our budget issues have been solved for next year. So still the case?
They haven't been solved.
They have not been solved. One of the things that I am interested in looking at an option, because the easiest thing to address financially is the stuff that has no need or functional purpose. And we had a review from technical experts on this garbage districting, and we know based on the technical information that we received and what we've learned from Bloomington that we're needlessly adding wear and tear to our roads right now on the order of millions of dollars a year. And secondarily, we know that Bloomington, which has a smaller service population, they were saving something like $13 million over 5 years on the consumer side by putting this together. And we've also been told in the past by the Director of Public Works that we have the option to put franchise fees in there. And we're sitting in the situation where not only are we struggling to fund our road maintenance next year at the level it was this year, but we have to substantially increase that every year for a lot of years to get where we need to be. And we don't necessarily have a plan yet to get there. So why don't we take a look and have Richard come back to us with with what it would look like if we go ahead with the garbage districting, and possibly there's a possibility that we could put a franchise fee in there and still deliver consumer bills that are less than they are today while generating a significant amount of money to maintain roadways. Otherwise, it's coming straight from the tax levy. And, if it has to come from the tax levy, it has to come from the tax levy. But I don't know if that 11% that we have in there right now is even putting us in the right direction on the road maintenance. It may.
And it will not.
And that's just the thing. How can you say that we're going to decrease our road maintenance dollars for 2017 on an ongoing issue when we know that we need to be increasing them substantially? So that's my thought.
Mr. Hickey, then Mr. Trimble.
It has some appeal, but I've had overwhelmingly negative comments to me about the district garbage hauling, so I'm not prepared to support that.
Okay.
Mr. Quimble?
I'll just indicate where I am now. I have gone through all the operating budgets with the department heads except mass transit and outside agencies. I have not yet reviewed any of their equipment revolving requests or the CIP requests. So where I am right now with reductions that I have made, without keeping the same amount of money that goes into CIP that we had last year or this year, the levy would be approximately 9.6% of an increase without any new positions at all. And so what I am intending to do is, once I finish up all of my discussions with the departments to see where I am, and with the same amount of money going into the CIP that we had last year, or this year, I keep saying, then I intend to ask you as a group what sort of appetite you have in terms of increase beyond what may be an 8% increase or something along those lines. I would have a difficulty recommending a budget myself with an 8% increase in the property taxes, but you may decide to do that on your own. I do intend to make the recommendation that we take $1.5 million from our undesignated reserve to put into the CIP to help some of those projects. And that would be, we anticipate to close the 2016 budget about $2.2 million in the black. And so I think our overall reserves are sufficient to allow that movement from the undesignated reserve into the CIP. In some years, especially in the 90s, we did that sort of on a frequent basis, closing in the black about $2.5 million, and then taking about $1.5 or $2 million out of the undesignated reserves to help fund our CIP. So I would assume, I hope, I mean, time's moving pretty fast, and so I have to make some decisions rather quickly, or recommendations on those items I just talked to you about. So possibly in about a week, week and a half, I can have back to you where we would be without any new decisions at all, and with that, whatever that old tentative increase may be, and then you will have to decide what, if anything, you might want to do in addition to that.
Now, when you say that the CIP is at the same level, does that mean we're putting the same amount into road repairs, maintenance?
Or because $4.4 million, and I haven't looked at the CIP yet in terms of making any judgments.
I mean, that because part of that is you had some one-time funds, I think, going in there.
Right.
And are you intending to replace those one-time funds?
I'm intending to keep the level pretty much where it's at.
Okay.
The total level.
And, and that's the whole concern is I will have concerns about not moving our road repairs in the direction it needs to be going, because there's nothing magical about 2017. It's not that we're faced with one-time costs. It has to do that we have a structural imbalance in how we're maintaining our infrastructure, and you just got to pay for it. And punting it one more year is not a good leadership move.
Maybe you have to look at things other than the property tax, such as streetlight utility,
mm-hmm.
something like that.
Well, and that's the thing. That's why I brought up this franchise fee. But if we're not willing to do any of these fees, as Mr. Hickey suggests, it has to be the property taxes. And but that's the point is you got it. Whether it's the fees or whether it's the property taxes, we've kicked the can down the road for so many years. I want to see us making progress.
I think it's important to tell the story a little bit because mm-hmm. I feel like it gets lost that there were, I'll call them magical buckets, but there were buckets of these kind of funds that have been held back from projects that we've been dipping into, and the wells run dry a little bit. So when you talk about, I mean, sure, if we just seem to be launching out there into this and that sort of thing, I've gotten the comments, too, about why is the city getting into garbage collection. But if the narrative is, listen, the roads don't repair themselves, you don't want it on property taxes, there's a way for us to both deliver the service and work toward eliminating a possible future liability for roads, I think that's a much more powerful story told wholeheartedly about why we're looking at this. It's not, we're just trying to get into more things. It's, listen, you're not going to want a 10% year-over-year increase to property tax. That's not something that's going to, you know, keep you interested. What if we instead say there's a service and we use that to subsidize some of these other holes we have? I completely understand the propensity to not want to change that, but I do think we're going to have something to go with the justifying this continuing maintenance glut we're in.
Okay.
I mean, remember, all things being equal, we put this on property taxes. We're not doing an 11% property tax increase. We're doing a 50% property tax increase. That was something different. I don't remember what that
I think
was.
I think that's dramatically different story than what we have gotten about the district and trash hauling. District and trash hauling was really attacked as a why now, why this project? And I think if now we have the why now, why this? I mean, it's a good thing we did some of that legwork so we knew about what size of hole that plugs.
But in the only comment I would make, no matter what we talk about, I think it has to be a multi-year strategy.
Oh, absolutely.
It took us a few years to get here. We're not going to fix it in 2017.
Right. You're absolutely right, and it's just year one of the strategy is not ignore it. Which is what we're budgeting.
Mr. Freeze earlier this year had given us a couple of options or laid out a few strategies that were multi-year.
Yeah.
Is that what we're budgeting? I just want to make sure, because what I heard was keeping the funding rate flat. And sometimes just smoothing out the descent is a step in landing the plane anyway.
But in terms of my, I haven't been ignoring the money, so I don't know if that's the right term.
Well, it needs to be 20 million.
But the
city council
members have wanted to have done all the years they've been doing, and they generally, they and the people have not wanted to see any significant property tax.
Well, and the whole thing, yet the city council keeps approving money losing infrastructure that we're on the hook for forever. And that's the thing. The city council, we can keep approving these huge money losing cul-de-sacs, but we still got to pay for them then.
Yeah, I don't disagree. But I don't make those decisions.
I think the fact is that we're listening. We're not saying we're doing it, but we're listening. And I think it's important for us to look at all the different options and avenues to look to go down. I mean, maybe this doesn't work. We kind of talked about it before, and there was no appetite for it. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't be reviewing or looking at the different options that are out there.
One other point I'd make is this issue is the same in almost every city in Minnesota. Minneapolis has the same issue. St. Paul has the issue. Duluth has the issue, and it goes back a lot to some changes in state policy back in the 70s that no city's been able to recover from unless you want massive levy increases, and councils throughout Minnesota have been reluctant to make large levy increases when the roads seem to be looking okay, but there's better strategies to do that. And the league has been unsuccessful in getting through a property tax utility, which is the way that cities do a better job of both planning for their future costs and paying for them, as you've done with your electric utility, your water utility, your sanitary sewer utility, and your stormwater utility. You don't have that for roadways.
Which is fantastic that the league is working on this, but if the state does not take responsible action, that does not mean the city council can choose to not take responsible action too. And I completely agree. Street utility, based on actual usage or frontage would be a fantastic way to address this. That's fantasy right now. And the reason why I brought this up here again today, and I'm going to keep bringing it up, is that when we actually get the budget in front of us and we're figuring out where we're going to set that levy, the simple question we have to ask ourselves is, have we made progress from 2016 to 2017 in addressing the issue? And that's what I'm looking for, and I don't know if we're going to be able to do it.
Okay. I think the point isn't lost, though, that sometimes the first step is just lowering the magnitude of loss. So I think advocating in the direction of stop approving money losing infrastructure.
Yes.
But additionally, we're hopefully swinging the pendulum in the right direction, and look forward to kind of seeing your first pass so we can have that discussion.
And we do need some positions. I mean, it's you can't keep ignoring the growth of the city, and we can't do that to the folks that are working for us.
All right. Any other questions, comments?
Okay. Trick or treat.
If there's nothing else, we will come to the chair.
You did have a good pun. I couldn't resist.
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks for putting that, Matt.